We have some holiday shopping numbers for you. From Marketplace in Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams in for David Brancaccio. We've seen strong shopping numbers in the last couple of months, and with the season coming to a close, the newest data says that streak is still going. Marketplace's Ryan Kailoth is here to talk Christmas time spending. Good morning, Ryan.
Hey, Kimberly. Happy Boxing Day.
Okay, so Boxing Day, the day after Christmas. What have we learned?
In a few words, more spending, less saving. So, like you said, the whole season's been really strong. Amazon said the Cyber Monday this year was its biggest ever. And analysts say part of it is that Christmas was on a Monday this year, which gave people the weekend for that extra last-minute shopping. MasterCard tracks this stuff, says it's the best growth in retail sales since 2011.
And where is that growth coming from?
So for many years, the rich have really driven this holiday spending, but this year analysts say more low and middle-income Americans are doing it too. And this gets to the saving part. So the country's saving rate is at a 10-year low, under 3%, and credit card debt is at its highest since 2008. So those can be warning signs of an impending recession, but generally analysts agree for now it's just signs of a strong economy.
All right, Marketplace's Ryan Kailoth, thanks so much. And starting on January 1st, workers earning minimum wage in 18 states and 20 cities will see a boost in pay. The wage increases are in large part a result of ballot measures and cost of living adjustments. Marketplace's Jed Kim reports on what that wave in pay hikes means.
The increases definitely mean big impacts for those at the low end of the pay scale. Some say the boost will also bleed over into local economies. Janelle Jones is an analyst with the Economic Policy Institute.
It's going to benefit 4.5 million workers, and it's going to be about an additional $5 billion in wages for workers. And this is incredible because something that, you know, we definitely know is that when low-wage workers and minimum-wage workers receive wage increases, that goes right back into the economy.
Many businesses say increases will hurt their ability to operate. Paul Son is with the National Employment Law Project. He says while there will be costs to owners, some shifts in earnings aren't necessarily bad.
Profits are up, productivity is up, but none of it's filtering down to workers. So this is one tool for making sure that companies share some of that revenue and growth with their frontline workforce.
He says all the state movement on minimum wage makes it likely a federal increase will be a big topic during the 2018 midterm elections. I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Asian markets ended the day mixed. Japan's Nikkei was down 0.2%, and the Shanghai Composite Index was up 0.8%. Markets in Germany, Britain, and France are still closed for the holiday, and the Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down ahead of the market open in the U.S.
When it comes to news about the economy, Marketplace has got you covered. And when you donate $10 a month or more to support the work that we do, you can get a Marketplace umbrella to help protect you from stormy weather. The real thanks you'll get for your gift is when you listen every day, knowing that you're making it possible for Marketplace to make people smarter about the economy and why it matters. We believe it's important work, which we're already doing, and with your help, we'll be able to do more of it and reach more people as well. Become a Marketplace investor today at marketplace.org. And thank you.
Natural and man-made disasters caused $136 billion of insured losses in 2017. That's according to a new report from the insurance company Swiss Re. The U.S., with its storms and fires, accounted for the biggest losses. All this week, we're checking in with communities that felt the impact of these disasters. Today, Houston, which suffered severe flooding from Hurricane Harvey in August. Marvin Odom is the chief recovery officer for the city. I spoke with him before the holidays.
There's, in a way, two cities right now. There's the city that was able to recover very quickly. I mean, Houston opened up for business, you know, 2 weeks after the storm. We were up and running. The danger is that what gets lost in that picture are the vast number of people and pockets and neighborhoods that have been severely impacted by the storm. And that's where we need to maintain the focus of this recovery. And that's where we need to maintain a certain amount of public awareness as well, so that we recognize there's still a tremendous amount to be done.
There was a lot written after the hurricane about the way that Houston had expanded in recent years and how that development contributed to the severity of the damage. What are the lessons learned in that regard, and what's going to change?
The mayor's been extremely strong in Houston with the perspective that we can't just build back what we had before. And you may want to use the phrase building forward. So the idea that we have to take that money that we have to recover from this storm and use it to both build better infrastructure, to do things like buyouts, buying out homes where there's no amount of change to bayous and other infrastructure we can put in place that are going to protect those homes, and also then to exercise the levers that the city has to do things differently, like building codes. How are things built in the future, and how are flooding events taken into account?
That sounds like you're needing to have conversations with people where you basically tell them their neighborhood is not coming back.
There's a number of, as you can imagine, interested parties in every aspect of this recovery. The one that really hits the home the most is a neighborhood and those people in that neighborhood. And really what's incumbent on us in the city is to look at the recovery across Houston on a neighborhood by neighborhood basis, and then helping people make their decisions and understand what their options are on a block by block, house by house basis. That's the granularity that we have to go to in this recovery to make sure it's done correctly.
What does 2018 look like for Houston?
2018 will be a critical year in the recovery. I will flag that, probably the number one issue as we leave 17 and go into 2018 is what is going to be the amount of federal funding that comes into the Houston area for recovery. The potential magnitude of that funding could be much smaller than what's required, and that is a huge concern.
Marvin Odom is the Chief Recovery Officer for the City of Houston. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kimberly.
FEMA says it's approved about $1.5 billion in funding so far for Texas overall. Congress is still negotiating an $81 billion funding bill for the multiple disasters we saw this year. The Senate will likely consider that bill in January. Tomorrow, we'll check in on a city in Florida that was hit by Hurricane Irma. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.